Hello and welcome to the final episode of series one of Is This Thing On The Podcast, hosted by me, Lindsay Bowers, and a man who recently described me as his mortal enemy on Twitter, Sachin Lakhani.
Hey, Lindsay's Sachin. Doing the intro. How did you find it?
That felt a bit hammy, actually. Did I do okay?
I think it was all right. Look, I'm no expert. I've done the seven intros that we've had all previously to this one, and I've listened back to them all, and I thought they've all been all right. It's a difficult skill, I think, introing a podcast, getting the tone right. You want to be kind of up and jolly and natural, but you're also talking into a microphone. You know, it's a skill that neither of us do professionally, so it's difficult. We're not natural broadcasters.
Oh, I've already said, do you know what? And that's something I hate myself doing on this podcast. Sorry, everyone who also gets annoyed by that. But this should feel more natural to me because I have actually had a tiny bit of training in TV presenting. There's a reason why that hasn't come to fruition. But anyway, don't swerve the intro there where I say... basically explain yourself. You tweeted that I'm your mortal enemy the other day and my feelings are a little bit hurt.
I meant it affectionately, but I can't actually remember the tweet. You want to just remind me who said it? I know I said it affectionately, but I can't remember the tweet.
Someone complimented my singing skills after our episode with Matt Ford, in which I erupted into a very strange operatic speaker kind of impersonation. Someone tweeted us saying, oh, Lindsay's got a good voice. Thank you, whoever that was. And you said, although she's my mortal enemy, yes, she does, or something like that. And I thought, is it?
You should take that as a compliment, because I really genuinely feel I know you well enough now to make jokes like that. You know, when you know someone well enough that you can start taking a piss out of them, I think we're at that stage now. We've been doing this podcast since August. It's now late November. Spent a fair amount of time together. We've drunk together. We've travelled on the underground together. So
I wonder how many bottles of red wine we drank together. Actually, it's probably like four.
I was thinking it's probably not that many. We had two in one night. We've got one tonight. We're back on the red wine tonight. And then we've had glasses. We had what, a couple of bottles between us when we had
Storm Huntley on. That was two bottles of red, but that
two
was
between the three of us. So not that many. So probably about four. But yeah, we are back on the red wine. We're back at the Duke.
Nice
having
Malbec.
It's a lovely glass, lovely bottle of red wine. I'm enjoying my glass. Back at the Duke, having been in Hampstead at the Hollybush with Matt Ford two weeks ago, which is really enjoyable. Very nice pub. But we are home for, as Lindsay said, our final episode of the series, episode 8 of series 1. We're going to do this one and then take a little break for Christmas and New Year, because it's going to get busy and hectic and there's people to see and parties to go to and various things to do. I've got quite a lot of live football coming up to watch. I simply must watch. Going to take a bit of a break and then come back in January. So hopefully go out with a bang.
Hopefully so.
Yeah, we've got a lot to talk about again. We're going to focus on Twitter etiquette at the start. I've got a few things to say about that. I'm sure you have as well. We'll then do our highs and lows of the year, which are various things, personal as well as kind of general. And then we'll have the usual quiz and the usual lead out music. So, first of all, Lindsay, haven't seen you for 2 weeks. How you been?
Has it been 2 weeks?
Well, since we did the Matt Ford episode, we record every 2 weeks. And despite the rumours in the gossip magazines, we don't meet up in between. All those rumours are completely untrue. We live very separate lives.
We do. How have I been? Well, actually, I was saying to you before we press play, I had a bit of a boozy weekend. I had the day off on Friday. My mum and stepdad came to see my new house for the first time, and it was a bit of a heavy one. They stayed over the night, didn't go to bed till 3:30 in the morning, and I wasn't actually going to admit this on here, but I ended up being sick.
You threw up,
which
didn't you?
Is very, very, very. I can only recall one time in my life before when I've been sick because of alcohol.
Just once, literally, entire life.
I take after my mum. We've both got concrete stomachs.
Wow.
I very rarely vomit in general, even when I'm sick. I can probably count on one hand the amount of times I've been sick in my life as an adult. But maybe I'm getting old or something. Because on Friday, I don't remember being out of control or anything. But I mean, we'd gone out for a curry, but the curry was very nice. I don't think there was anything wrong with it. I think it was literally I just had far too much to drink. So yeah, not my proudest moment at the age of 35.
I think that's fine. I've been sick a few times after drinking. I think it's good because I feel it flushes out the system.
I couldn't believe how much better I felt afterwards.
Cleans out the system. Now I
get why people do this a lot. I mean, some people, well, they don't choose to do it, but it's part of their routine, isn't it? Go out, get pissed.
Yeah. When I'm ill, like properly ill, and I throw up, it's very painful and horrible, but for me it's the first step towards recovery. It's sort of flushing out the system. You think, right, that's gone, the internal system's better, it's now about clearing the head, clearing the nose, all that stuff, but the stomach area is better, cleaner. So it's painful, and yeah, it's got a humiliating feel to it, throwing up, but I think it's good because that means, I mean, look, doctors, please feel free to correct me, but I think throwing up means you're getting rid of toxic stuff in your stomach that shouldn't be there. So it's good, it's better out than in, as the saying goes.
I don't think you need to be a doctor to know that's true.
Pretty obvious stuff. I feel confident in my medical diagnosis there.
Dr. Necrani is just talking to us and listening. But anyway, moving on from my bodily functions, other than that, I feel like I'm winding down for the year work-wise, because I haven't got that many 4 weeks left of the year. I've got all of next week off, and then I've got like a random day here and there, so it feels like, you know, Christmas is coming. And
so is Jeremy Vine not on during Christmas?
It's not on, you know, sort of the irritating days in between Christmas and New Year. Yeah. We come off there on the 20th and then we don't go back on till the 2nd. So that's only a week. But
that really is the weirdest time of the year, isn't it? The week between Christmas and New Year. It's such a black hole
it's like
of the time.
It's weird kind of purgatory, isn't it? Yeah. Where you kind of...
I don't know what day it is.
Yeah, it's nice because you're not, you know, most of us aren't at work, but you're just living off cheese and chocolate and leftovers, and you feel a little bit sluggish from all the alcohol, but then you're still like, there's so much on that you end up drinking again anyway, or I do anyway. But actually it's nice not having to work, because when I worked on Good Morning Britain, I did often have to go in those days because it's still on air, and that's, you know, yeah, I'm glad I don't have to do that anymore.
I got my Christmas rota recently, and it's pretty brutal. So I'm working.
Yeah, because Boxing Day matches and things, right?
Well, I often have Boxing Day off. I the way it works at the Guardian is we get asked in advance for we work on a month by month rota, and we get asked in advance by the guy who does the rota what days we want for the following month, and then he'll try his best to accommodate. And over Christmas, obviously, there's a lot of requests for specific days, and he makes it clear that if you haven't worked on a Boxing Day 1 year, you're likely to have to work it the next year. And I was off last Boxing Day. So I thought, okay, fair enough, I'll work this year. So I didn't even ask for it. I just thought, it's fine. If he puts me on Boxing Day, I've got to take a hit because I had it off last year. So I'm working on Boxing Day. Two things, though. I'm night editing. So I'm going to be working from 5 p.m. till 1 a.m. on Boxing Day. Ooh. Secondly, I'm working Christmas Eve, which I'm pretty sure you shouldn't have to work Christmas Eve and Boxing Day. I rarely ever work Christmas Eve. I've been at Garden 12 years. I don't think I've ever worked Christmas Eve, bar maybe my first year. And check this out. Night editing on New Year's Eve. I have done that before, in fairness, and I don't mind too much because I don't do a lot at home, you know, just watch TV with the wife, glass of wine, all that stuff. But also night editing New Year's Day as well.
Does the person who does your rota listen to this?
He doesn't. Philip, hello Philip, if you are listening by any chance.
Philip, sort it out, mate.
I know, it's absolutely brutal. I mean, the way it normally works as well is if you have a busy Christmas, you kind of get days off during the New Year, or if you work New Year, you get days off over Christmas, just naturally, because we need fewer people in, because there's less happening. There's a lot of pre-done features that are just kind of thrown onto the paper. We don't have a Christmas Day edition, for instance, so there's no work needed for that. So I should have either a quiet Christmas and a busy New Year, or a busy Christmas and a quiet New Year. And I've got a busy Christmas and a busy New Year. So I'm not going to make a big fuss about it, because in fairness, all my other requests have been met.
That's good.
So I think I should probably just take it on the chin and make sure next year I get those days off. Excellent. Right. Should we talk about Twitter etiquette? So, we talk a lot about social media on this podcast, which I think is absolutely fair enough, given it's a huge part of both of our lives. It's a huge part of everyone's life, I guess.
And I think a lot of people listen to us because of social media.
And we met on social media. So it is a reoccurring theme. And one thing I want to talk, I sort of felt like I wanted to talk about this for a while, but it's come up now because of something specific that happened to me, which I'll reference very soon. But yeah, Twitter etiquette, the way people behave on Twitter, and I think what it perhaps says about them as well. So what happened to me then? A couple of weeks ago, I was, I think it was a Tuesday evening. I was on childcare duties. My daughter was in the living room watching Strictly Come Dancing or whatever. I was in the other room just kind of pottering around, having a cup of tea, whatever. And my phone was at hand, and I thought, I'll just go on Twitter, ironically, see what's happening. And there was a link to an article on Football 365, which you should remember well, Lindsay, of course. That was a
site that
you wrote for via me, that Q&A piece that we did. It was an article by, and I'm going to name him, I don't care, a guy called Will Ford, at WillFordy25. And it was about a Manchester United fullback called Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Now, that isn't too important, so don't switch off, Lindsay. Please continue listening
to
me.
I'm just sitting here thinking, when we plug this on Twitter, are we going to at him?
May do. So anyway, I saw this article by Will Ford. I've not heard of Will Ford. You know, I checked. He's a freelance journalist. I don't know why. Something made me want to read this article. I just thought, I won't bore you with the details of this, Lindsay, but Aaron Wan-Bissaka, he's a player who joined Manchester United from Crystal Palace in the summer. Quite highly rated young English defender. Had an up and down start so far to his career at Man United, and there was this article basically suggesting he's not very good, or not that he's not very good, but maybe he's not as good as people think. So I thought, I'll read that. I'm not doing anything else. Let's read it. I read it, and it was a very good article. I really enjoyed it. So as I often do, I thought I'll tweet out and tell my followers what a good article this is. So along the lines of, this is really good by Will at Will4D25 on Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Put that tweet out. A little while later, went back on Twitter and Will had liked it. So that's very nice of him, no biggie there. So okay, fair enough. A little bit later, there's a few comments under my tweet plugging Will's article. You know, people saying, yeah, good article, or blah, 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 blah. And one of them was by a guy called Andy. I don't remember the rest of his handle or his name, but it was Andy, that's a key bit. So Andy had said something nice as well. Will Ford, that's his name, isn't it? Yeah, Will Ford. He had then gone into the comment section and said to Andy, thanks, Andy. And this immediately struck me as weird and a little bit insulting, because I thought, you haven't said thank you to me for plugging your article, but you have thanked a guy who's responded to my tweet plugging your article. And I'm sorry, this is going to sound really petty and small. I immediately deleted my tweet. So it wiped out all the responses. There's only about four.
That is so fucking petty.
I'm sorry, I stand by it. I absolutely stand by it.
No.
Well, this is the interesting debate,
Sachin,
right?
It's because you're a verified account, so he probably... Look, I kind of get it. Like, if, say... You know, I get famous people retweet me sometimes because I work with them. Like, sometimes Jeremy Vine retweets me because I work with him. And if... I won't feel like I don't know, it's weird because he's famous, they get so many replies, and because you're verified, he probably thinks you get so many replies he won't notice whether you reply to him or not. And the fact
you think it's that
it, yeah, and the fact you've taken it that personally is a bit sad.
Well, I tell you what links back to, look, I don't know Will, and Will, if you're listening, please, you know, you've got a right to reply, you know my Twitter handle, come back at me. But you're saying that's interesting. I personally disagree that was his approach, because I'm not famous in any way at all. I know I'm verified and all that stuff, but
you've got a lot of followers and you've got a blue tick.
Yeah, but so but also there was only about three or four responses to my tweet. There were only so two questions, so it's not blown up, so it's not like, oh my god, this really important notable person has tweeted my article and it's blown up and there's no point going to him because this probably happens to him all the time. There's only like four. And also, it's still then a bizarre approach. Why has he only said yes to Andy and not to the other two or three people? Maybe he knows Andy, perhaps. I don't think he does. I didn't get the sense he did. But for me, this is just the wider issue, because I really try and promote people on Twitter who write good stuff, and in particular people who aren't well known. Will is not well known. I think he's got 150 to 200 followers. And I often don't plug really well known people, because they get plugged all the time.
Yeah.
You know, prominent people, I think. I'm not adding anything there, but if someone's not particularly well known, maybe a friend or someone I don't know, and I think they're not, you know, someone I've not heard of before, not got any followers, they might want a bit of a bump from me who's got a decent amount of followers. I do that a lot, and most people, Lindsay, do say thank you. So I think it is very odd that Will didn't, and it taps into my my take on how Twitter works, the politics, and this is, we're going back to Twitter etiquette. So there are four responses, I think, to a compliment. And correct me if I'm wrong. Ignore, like, retweet, comment, in that order.
So if I say,
brilliant article by Lindsay Bowers, there's four things you can do in response to that. You can ignore it, which you can do, it's entitled to do that. You can like it, You can retweet it or comment, and in that ascending order, the higher you go in that order, the more polite you're being. So if you ignore my compliment, I think that's a bit rude. I've said something nice about something you've done, and you've just blanked and gone, well, you're not significant enough to respond. I think that's a bit rude. Liking, at least you've engaged with it, acknowledged with it. But again, it's pretty lazy just to go like. Retweet is saying, oh, I'm really glad you've liked my article, and I'm going to let my followers know you like my article and bring you into my community. Comment is actually going, I'm going to sit down here for, it's not even that long sometimes, is it? 30 seconds, and make some effort and come back to you and say, thanks for that.
Yeah.
Now, personally, if someone compliments anything I do, whoever it is, whether it's, I mean, this has not happened ever, I don't think, but if it's Gary Lineker or Gary the Butcher, I will always say thank you. Even it takes 3 seconds to go, thank you. Thank you, mate. Cheers. Thank you. I will always go. I've had a couple of articles, it hasn't happened a lot in my life, where it's blown up and loads of people have said, well done. It's very rarely, a couple of stuff. And then it's really hard to obviously get back to everybody. But then what I do is I tend to put a tweet out saying, to everyone, thanks to everyone who's commented on blah, 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 piece. Too many people to get back to. So to all of you, thanks for the nice comments. Really appreciate it. I always try, because I just think it's so nice when people say nice things about you. Generally, but also on social media. And it's the equivalent. Imagine we were sitting here now and you'd written something or done something on Jeremy Vine. And I'd say, God, Lindsay, that was brilliant, that thing you did. And you just turned your head away or just kind of nodded. I'd be like, that's a bit weird.
I mean, people act completely differently on Twitter to how they do in real life. But no, now you've explained it, I do get what you mean. I do think it was incredibly petty to delete it because of it. But having
I stand by it.
Having come to know you, it doesn't surprise me that much.
I'm a petty person.
You can be a bit grumpy about things sometimes.
I can be, yeah.
But you know, that's you, and own it. That's fair enough. I wrote something about a year ago just on my personal blog, which got a lot of response. And I remember I did make a concentrated effort to like every positive reply I got. I'm not a big fan of retweeting every single great thing someone tweets about me, because then it makes you look like a bit of a wanker. And I would only reply to, like, I think I only reply if I've got something of substance to say, that I can carry on the discourse somehow. Because I think of the like as, some people would think of the like as saying thank you.
Okay, that's fair enough. I think the retweet thing, I think, is a really good point. I don't often retweet compliments to me, because I think that does look very arrogant. And there are people who do that, and I think, come on, mate. That's just a bit arrogant.
I'm going to tweet you right now saying Sachin's looking sexy as hell right now.
Yeah. I'll go. Cheers, mate. That's what I'll do.
Not really.
So, I don't retweet compliments often. What I will do is I will comment and just say thanks. Because it takes 3 seconds, you know.
Yeah.
It's really easy to do. It's as easy, a little bit harder to say thank you than to like. I get your thing with like, because you're kind of saying, I acknowledge you, and that's fine. And that's interesting. You're saying on comment, you feel you only do that if it's about engaging. But I just think it's a nice thing. If someone says something nice about something you've done, to just say thank you. I really like it when I do it with anyone else, whether it's, as I said, some high-profile columnist or Will Ford, to get a response back saying thank you. And maybe that makes me sound fucking over, you know, precious. Oh, I need to be, you know, I need to be engaged with all the time. I need my existence recognised. But I don't know. I just think I do it, and so I feel it's nice when people do it in return.
Yeah, but you shared that article for a reason, other than kind of promoting for the sake of being promoted back, I hope, because...
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not looking back, I know.
You know, I do get it, I do. But I think at the end of the day, if you're sharing that content because you thought it was good content... You should just get it up there.
Well, just to say, if he had liked it and done nothing else, I would have been fine with that. I didn't mind.
He said he had liked it.
No, he had liked it, and that was fine. I liked it at that point. Yeah. It was when he said thanks, Andy. That's what wound me up. That's the bit.
Yeah.
It's not that he didn't respond to me, because I thought, as I said,
he might know Andy.
Well, as I said, I think he may have liked Andy, but I don't think he did, because it literally thanks Andy, and I think if you knew Andy, you'd just get more of a sense of it. It'd be thanks, mate. Cheers,
Andy,
mate.
Could be like in accounts in his office, or could be his, you know, brother-in-law's cousin, someone he doesn't know that well. Andy, who I met once at a wedding, has replied to his tweets. I better you know, next time I see it at a family function. It might, you don't know, you don't know.
Also, though, but yeah, okay, fair enough, that is fair enough. I still, though, if it was, honestly, if it was me and I had done that where I'd liked a compliment but then gone in and said thank you to someone who'd replied to the compliment, I would make, I would definitely make a further acknowledgement, additional acknowledgement to the original person. I just would have done it. Anyway, I am probably petty and grumpy.
You are a grump.
Now, normally at this stage, we go to the bar, but we are on a bottle of wine, which is at the table. No. So, should we just crack on? Or do you want a break? Do you want to go to the toilet or anything?
No, I don't need the toilet, but is it going to be weird for the listeners? Because I know Clive Whittingham tells me, he's going to be the new Malcolm, he listens to us while he's having a run, and he says if he doesn't get to a certain point by the time we top up our drinks, then he knows he's not going quick enough. So,
okay.
Clive, come on, you need to be at that point now.
Let's go for a break, sponsored by Clive Whittingham. We're going to call it the Clive Whittingham break. I'll go for a wee. You go for a wee if you want, and we'll let Clive get a breather. So break time.
Woo!
We're back from the Clive Whittingham break. I went to the toilet. You stayed here. I think you sat at the table, didn't you, Lindsay?
Yeah, I just stayed here and looked at my phone to see if any messages had come in, which they haven't. But anyway, so alone. No, but I noticed my Twitter follower account has gone down by one. So I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I have an app that tells me who unfollows me on Twitter.
And apparently I'm the one obsessed with Twitter.
Yeah, talking on Twitter etiquette and saying, you know, you take it far too seriously. I do have an app that
there
tells
you
me
you hypocrite.
When people unfollow me. And it's actually quite a relief because when I looked at who unfollowed me just now, it was just an account that had been suspended. A lot of it are accounts being suspended, like 80% of the time. But every now and then, or otherwise it'll be people who have followed who I've not noticed they've followed and I haven't followed them back. But every now and then it'll be someone who like I used to work with or someone I know IRL. And that will be a little jab of, what did I do to piss them off? But yeah, there you go.
Feeding into Twitter etiquette. Before we carry on, should we just set the scene a bit? So we are at our favourite table at the Duke. When we recorded our very first episode, we were at this long table at the back, which I got some affection for, but we haven't been at that table for every episode. For the last episode we did here, we were at the little round table by the fireplace, but we've got our long table back. It's very quiet. I think there was at the round table three blokes. They've just left. There's another couple of guys near us. There's a few people at the bar. A very quiet, I mean, it's Monday, so no surprise, but it's a very quiet evening.
I prefer this table to the round table.
Oh, yeah, I prefer
this table.
We're
directly opposite each other.
Yeah.
So it feels kind of equal.
Yeah, and there's more space as well, because we've got a lot of kit here. There's a lot of stuff going on from a production point of view. Anyway, just thought I'd set the scene a bit. So, should we talk about highs and lows? We're going to keep this quite loose. So, as I said, it's our kind of end of year episode, because this is our final episode of 2019. So I thought, let's just talk about our highs and lows, keep it pretty open, pretty loose, personal things, other things, no set categories, just talk as we go. I've got a few things on my list, but Lindsay, do you want to go first? Anything you want to pick out, good or bad?
2019.
Has it been a good year? Quickly, out of 10, what's 2019 be like you as a year?
I'd say a solid at least 9.
Well, you got proposed to in this month.
I got proposed
year.
To, I bought a house.
Yeah.
I had a lot of good experiences, a lot of good times. Yeah, it's been a pretty good year for me, actually.
I'd say it's an 8. A lot of good things have happened this year. Yeah,
that's good.
A lot of good things,
lovely.
Which I'll talk about. Some of them I'll touch on in this section. But anyway, do you want to go first? Any highs or lows?
So I've been thinking about the year in terms of news, being a journalist and someone who works on the current affairs programme. And, you know, when you think of the news in 2019 thus far, it's the B word, isn't it? And politics. He dedicated an entire episode to it with someone who was absolutely brilliant at talking about all that, Matt Ford. I literally could listen to that man talk for hours.
He's brilliant on politics. Brilliant.
Yeah, he was brilliant. So, you know, I feel like I can't talk about 2019 without mentioning the politics. It's just been crazy. I mean, in a way, it's fatiguing. But as a journalist, I don't know if you agree, it's also a really exciting time to be working as a journalist.
Well, I said to Matt at the very start of our politics, the politics section of our chat at the Hollybush a couple of weeks ago, that There's this narrative that's formed in this country that everyone's bored of Brexit and everyone's, as you said, fatigued by it. But I think it's to an extent the opposite. I think, well, some people are probably bored and fed up of it, but I think a lot of people are just absolutely enthralled by it. We are essentially living in the chapter of a future history textbook. People will study this in school in 20 years' time.
And when I was at school, I loved history. Yeah. I'm still absolutely fascinated by history. Like, I love kind of learning about the Tudors and the Weimar Republic and any kind of shit you can learn about, really. And I'm thinking one day this, like, there's going to be entire degrees about this.
Oh yeah, probably more than a chapter.
Probably very, very soon. Yeah. But anyway, that, I mean, it's such a big ballpark, and it's not even a 2019 thing. It's part of this decade, so it's too kind of broad to really talk about. But one thing I do want to talk about this year, and I think it's particularly interesting because I know we have conflicting views on it, is the royal family. And I'm going to say this now, I've only realised in the last 2 or 3 years, but I think I am a royalist, and I know you are not. I know you.
And this is the moment this podcast comes to an end. Lindsay, it's been wonderful working with you.
I've been waiting for the...
Go on.
Well, okay, maybe royalist is too strong a word, but I like the royal family. I think they bring an awful lot to this country. I think they are part of what makes this country interesting. It's the whole we're living in a textbook, in a history textbook thing. The royal family still being around means that we are still making history, that people, you know the way our kids nowadays read about Henry VIII, one day they'll be reading about King Charles, maybe. Who knows?
That's a good way to put it, I guess. And actually, I mean, Meghan Markle is a real seismic moment in the royal family's
history. Absolutely. And I was going to ask you something to do with her, actually. So, first of all, the reason why I think royal family when I think maybe a low light of 2019 is because it's been a, as the Queen might say, annus horribilis. I don't know how to say it, but you know,
I think that's right.
92. Yeah, she, yeah. I think it was 92. Three of her four children were going through a divorce, and in her Queen's speech, she referred it to it as an annus horribilis, horrible year. And I think, you know, I'll be interested to see what she says on her Queen's speech this year, because Prince Philip had a car crash in January.
Prince Andrew had a car crash on TV.
Prince Andrew had a car crash on TV quite recently.
Did you watch that, by the way? Oh, no, you watched it on delay, didn't you? I saw you on Twitter. You watched it on the Saturday, didn't you?
A couple of days after it went out, but by then I knew all the worst bits anyway.
Yeah. You saw all the sweating and woking Pizza Express stuff. That was the highlights,
the
obviously.
The not sweating,
I should say, yeah.
Yeah. And but also, I've had a weird kind of U-turn with Meghan, because he brought up... So when Harry married Meghan, I didn't like her. I thought she was phony. I thought she was putting on an act. I thought you could kind of see the pound signs lighting up in her eyes almost. I don't think she kind of married into the family for fortune, but fame, certainly, definitely. I think she would not give him a second look if he wasn't who he is.
There is absolutely no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Let's be frank about this.
Fast forward to now, I feel sorry for her. I do. I don't think she quite realised what she was getting into. And I do think she must love him on some level. But I do feel really sorry for her. And you know that incredible interview ITV News got, well, the kind of documentary in Africa, where they really opened up and said, look, we're finding this really hard, all this bad press. That's usually the kind of thing that made me be like, like, poor little rich girl on boy, you know, get over it. You've got an amazing life. But I watched it and thought, we're all terrible people. I'm a terrible person. I felt ashamed of myself. I thought, this poor woman, she's got all the riches. You could see the hurt in her eyes as someone who's just had a baby. And oh my God, the look of contempt you're giving me right now. But when they got married, she was, you know, she was this beautiful, glamorous woman who's just come over from the States, and we welcomed her with open arms, And slowly the worm has turned, and it's so ugly. It's so ugly. And I feel for Harry. Harry used to be our darling, and now people are turning against him, saying, oh, that witch has, you know, changed him.
I mean, there is something, there's an underlying, a very sinister underlying element to all of this.
My question to you was going to be, do you think it's a racist undertone?
I think absolutely with certain sections of the right-wing press, absolutely, yeah. I think if she was white, Kate Middleton didn't get this stick. I think Meghan's got it for being two things, and this is a wider issue. If you're from a ethnic background in our society, Western society in general, but British society as well, and you're outspoken, you're not allowed to be those two things. There is, either at subconscious level but also at conscious level, a feeling in this country, because we're a very class-based country and we have obviously issues with race as well, that certain people should know their place and they shouldn't speak out. And that, for me, absolutely includes ethnic minorities. So you see a lot in the realms of sport as well. Black people who speak out are condemned and, in not so many words, told to basically shut up and know their place. And if you're outspoken and you're black, you don't get very far. And that's where the sort of the whole Uncle Tom thing comes from, that often the black people who do well in many various sectors of society are those ones who kind of keep their head down, shut up, yes sir, no sir, and get on with it. And those who speak out are condemned. I mean, it goes back, it's so historical and so deep-rooted, certain elements of it in slavery, that if you are coloured and you speak and you're forthright, as Meghan Markle is about, obviously, women's rights and other issues, you are looked down on in the way that white people are. And that's to some extent, I think it's subconscious, but also at some levels it's just conscious.
But it's becoming undeniable, and it's absolutely the same in daytime TV. I've noticed in my years working there, not the shows themselves, the people I work with, the shows I've worked with have always given everyone a platform. But the responses I see on social media will always be far harsher if it's an ethnic woman, a woman of an ethnic minority.
Well, that's really interesting. Took a slight tangent there, but really interesting. Right, so I'm going to talk about my news story of the year. It's a lot more frivolous than talking about race. Well, in a way, it's talking about race, but in a slightly intangible way. Anyway, let me get on to it. I'm waffling here. So this is a story. It's a football related story, but I still want to bring it up because I think Lindsay might get a bit of a kick out of it, because there's a visual element to it as well.
No pun intended.
And I also want to bring it up because I wrote the headline. So it goes back to April, and there was a footballer, Lindsay, called Wayne. He still is a footballer called Wayne Hennessy, who's a goalkeeper for Crystal Palace. And a picture emerged on Instagram of him making what looked pretty clearly to be a Nazi salute. He was at a team dinner, it was a dinner, I think. So it was a long table, like the one we're sitting at the moment. Lots of Crystal Palace players having a bonding session, or it might have been an end-of-season dinner or something. I can't quite remember. And Wayne Hennessy was pictured in the photograph that was taken and put on Instagram, interestingly, by one of his teammates, making what looked pretty clear to be a Nazi salute. So this became obviously a bit of an issue, especially given the player who took the picture was a guy called Max Meyer, who is German. So people wondering, was Hennessy making a very, very ill-informed, crude joke at Max Meyer's expense? So it sort of blew up, and the Football Association, the governing body for football in this country, got involved. There was a possibility of charging him for making like an offensive gesture. Anyway, Hennessy got off the charge for the reason that, this is the reason he gave in his hearing, that he didn't know who the Nazis were. He said he'd never heard of them, and the gesture he was making was not a Nazi salute, but a gesture to Max Meyer to say, come on, hurry up, get on with it.
How old is this guy?
Late 20s, early 30s, possibly. Right. Now, the reason, so this is my favourite news story. Well, it's my favourite news story because, in my opinion, and I think the opinion of a lot of people, it's frankly ridiculous. But, and I will show you the pictures in a second of Wayne Hennessy and allow you to make your own judgment.
Thought, maybe I've seen this, but I don't remember. No, I don't.
But
think
also, the head. What really stood out for me was the headline that came about after Wayne Hennessy's manager, Roy Hodgson, commented on this story. So the head, and I wrote, I was very proud of this, I wrote the headline for the Guardian's version of this news story, and the headline is, my headline of the year for my news story of the year is...
He's supposed to be just jizzing all over himself here.
Wayne Hennessy is desperate to learn more about the Nazis, says Roy Hodgson, which I can't tell you the joy I had writing that headline. And we put the story up, and it blew up. It was one of the most read stories of the year. People just... obviously just thinking it's the most ridiculous thing they've ever seen. So anyway, I should say Wayne Hennessy got off on this using this inverted commas
excuse
that he never learned of the Nazis. The FA let him off. They believed that he had never heard of the Nazis. So Lindsay, I'm now going to show you the picture of Wayne Hennessy.
Yeah, because I thought, oh, maybe he, you know, now, maybe he's doing another kind of hand movement and just got caught at the wrong time.
This is a picture from Max Meyer's Instagram account. Max Meyer, Crystal Palace played German. This is a picture he took. This is the picture. This is the image now of Wayne Hennessy not making a Nazi salute.
Not knowing who they are.
Here you go. What do you make of that? I'm showing Lindsay the picture of Wayne Hennessy's gesture.
I mean... Oh, do you know... I thought that was his hand.
No. That's his hand. Oh, there's Wayne Hennessy's hand. There's Wayne Hennessy's other hand.
So and he could Wayne get away with saying one hand's in the air to get the attention of his mate, but the other hand going underneath his nose to look like a Hitler moustache is a little bit of a giveaway.
What we're basically saying is...
he might know what a Nazi is.
That's a Nazi salute. Come on. That is clearly a Nazi salute.
The person he was doing it to, were they... German.
They're German.
Oh my God!
That's what I'm saying. It's Max Meyer. He's a German. That picture appeared on Max Meyer's Instagram account. Max Meyer's a German. I'm sorry, Wayne Hennessy. I'm sure you're a lovely man, but that is a Nazi salute, and you know it. So anyway, that is my story of the year and my headline of the year. So
wow.
There you go.
Well, I've got a football kind of related story.
Yeah. Go on. I think I know what this is.
Well, because I told you earlier to make sure you weren't going to bring it up.
That's why I know what it is.
He likes to pretend he's so wise. Wagatha Christie,
yeah. Belter.
I mean, I don't give that much of a shit about footballers' wives and their fallings out with each other, but oh my God, that was the tall drink of water I think we all needed. Colleen Rooney has accused Rebecca Vardy of leaking stories to the press from her Instagram account, and it isn't the story itself, it's just the way everyone reacted to it. Twitter was absolutely fantastic, of absolute fire that day. It's actually horrible because Rebecca Vardy was heavily pregnant and by some accounts very, very stressed about you know, being accused of something that she claimed she didn't do. And it is true, famous people do have other people, you know, logging into their accounts for them, so it might not have been her, just to put that out there. But oh, Colleen Rooney. I mean, I've got so much respect for her now. The way she...
It's the way she
executed
said
it.
I was going to say, it's the execution. Oh. It's the ... Rebecca Vardy.
It's Rebecca Vardy's account.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay, should we blast through a few other things? So I'm gonna mention my TV show of the year.
Okay.
And it's not actually something I watched on a conventional TV. It was on a screen on an aeroplane coming back from California in the summer. And it's a brilliant documentary, Fire Fraud, which is a documentary, one of two documentaries about the Fire Festival. I love documentaries, you know, that these really high-class kind of HBO-style documentaries, although this wasn't HBO. And I didn't know anything about Fire. I'd heard about it, but hadn't taken much interest in it. I'm going to actually read the Wikipedia account of Fire, because I think it sums up brilliantly. So what Wikipedia describes Fire as a fraudulent luxury music festival founded by Billy McFarland and rapper Ja Rule. It was created with the intent of promoting the company's Fire app, which is to say Fire is spelled F-Y-R-E, for booking music talent. The festival was scheduled to take place on April 28th to 30th and May 5th to the 7th, 2017, on the Bahamian island of Great Exuma. But, of course, it never happened. The event was promoted on Instagram by social media influencers, including Kendall Jenner, Bella Hadid, and Hailey Baldwin.
I know who all those people
are. Yeah, you. I've not heard. Oh, I've heard of Kendall Jenner, I've got to be honest. Many of whom didn't initially disclose that they'd been paid to do so. During the Fyre Festival's inaugural weekend, the event experienced problems relating to security, food, accommodation, medical services and artist relations, resulting in the festival being postponed indefinitely. Instead of luxury villas and gourmet meals for which the festival attendees paid thousands of dollars, they received prepackaged sandwiches and FEMA tents as their accommodation. In March 2018, McFarlane pleaded guilty to one count of wire fraud to defraud investors and ticket holders, and a second count to defraud a ticket vendor that occurred, and this is the most staggering bit, while out on bail. So when he was in bed, he committed another fraud. In October 2018, McFarlane was sentenced to 6 years in prison, ordered to forfeit the US, sorry, to forfeit US $26 million. It's just an amazing story. It's a story about hubris, of arrogance, of recklessness, of just outright stupidity.
On both sides.
Well, this is the point I was going
to
make.
Who bought a ticket to that shit show?
Well, this is literally the point I was going to make, because it's also a documentary that shines a harsh light on Instagram, and this is the point I was making earlier. Because it shows,
yes,
for me, the vacuous and, sorry, I've got to say, slightly pathetic nature of, not all people, obviously, but certain level of people, should we say, who are on Instagram, who are sort of chasing that very kind of
perfection.
Perfection and attention-seeking need. And people who are completely overwhelmed by influencers who, from what I can tell, have no discernible talent or anything to offer society. And the reason people pay thousands to be at this festival, from what I can tell, is just because those Instagram influencers were there. And obviously there was music talent as well, but I think it was to chase these influencers. It's kind of so this circle of kind of nonsense and nothingness of vacuous people chasing vacuous people. So I thought it was really interesting in that sense, but it's just a gripping story. And Billy McFarland, just one of the most ridiculous human beings there's ever been. I mean, just reckless, stupid, greedy. As I said, caught up in his own hype, a man, a victim of his own hubris. And it's a fantastic documentary. There are actually two documentaries about the Fyre Festival. I've only seen Fyre Fraud. I think there's one that's just literally called Fyre, I think. But I was gripped by it on my journey home from the US. And I'm heavily, massively recommend it if you've not seen it. I don't know if you've seen either
documentary. I've seen one of the documentaries.
Yeah.
The one that was kind of big.
Well, there were two. The one that Billy McFarlane actually was on and that he spoke on was Fyre Fraud. That's the one I saw. And there's
I
one
think
that,
I've seen the one just called Fyre.
Yeah, so you've probably seen the one he's not on. So I'm not seeing the other one. I'm sure that's very good as well. But the one I saw was great. I really enjoyed it. So, yeah. Have you got any cultural highlights of the year, specifically?
In terms of documentaries, have you seen one that's come out on Netflix lately called Tell Me Who I Am?
I've heard about it, but I've not seen it. I've heard it's very good, yeah. Tell me about it.
It is harrowing. Mm. Absolutely harrowing, but also one of the most extraordinary things I've ever seen. It's about twin brothers. They're now around 50 years old now, I think. But when they were 19, 20, one of them was in quite a serious accident, which meant he lost his memory.
All right.
And when he came to from the accident, he couldn't remember anything about who he was or anything about his life. But he recognised his twin brother and knew who his twin brother was. So it's up to his twin brother to help him piece together his life.
He
said, when I came to, I looked and was like, there's my brother. There was also a hysterical woman kind of shouting my name. I was like, who's she? It's my mother. And I won't give away too much, actually. I'll keep it very short and sweet. But it turns out the brother kind of chooses what to tell him and what not.
Right.
And then the documentary is incredible because it surprises you, because just when you think it's going to end, it goes to this next level that you would have never seen on any documentary before. You think it's about to get so dark and so deep and so personal, it's going to leave it there and you can only imagine what happens from beyond this point. But then what happens beyond that point, they just show it.
Wow.
And you're just like, wow.
I love a good twist. Is it a twist? Is it technically a twist?
I don't want to call it a twist, but
okay.
It's some people would call it that. I saw it coming.
Oh, okay.
But it's still impactful to the extreme. And if you like a good documentary, absolutely. No. And the thing that makes it impactful is that the people concerned, the two brothers, are so likeable and eloquent and just have a way of words that you just warm to them. You just warm to them and you like them, and it makes it even more heartbreaking. It is heartbreaking. It's utterly devastating.
I've heard very good things about it. I will check it out.
But yeah, watch it. Watch it and let me know what you think.
My film of the year. We won't talk about it too much. We talked about loads on another episode. Joker. You're not a fan,
are
you?
What a film of the year is, actually. I don't know if I've got a film of the year. I mean, what else even came out
this
year?
Yeah, well, I did a check on this, actually, before, when I was compiling this list, thinking what else has been out this year. It feels like quite a barren year for films, actually. Yeah. I mean, the other ones I could...
Films in general are going down.
Maybe, yeah. And the other ones, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, have you seen that?
No.
I enjoyed that. Toy Story 4 was good.
I watched that the other day on one of the streaming things. Kind of got bored towards the end. I usually do cartoon films.
No, really? Oh,
you know, kind of it starts off really charmingly and engaging, and then towards the end it's all action and kind of whiz bang, and by then I'm a bit like, can't bother to, like, I don't have much.
I think Toy Story 3 might be my favourite of the Toy Stories, but I did enjoy it. And my other highlight, Lindsay, I'm gonna be a bit soppy now, is doing this podcast.
Oh, that's one of my highlights as well. I'm not just saying that.
I mentioned this on I think episode 6 that I had a very painful experience with the previous podcast I did. And I'll be obvious, we met to discuss it, and I put everything out there with you, and it was a leap of faith for you to get involved, and I really appreciate you doing so. We're on our 8th episode, not many, but actually 16 weeks worth of effort, because we do it every 2 weeks, and that's a lot. People don't realize this, but behind the scenes we're talking a lot, we're engaging a lot in terms of what content we should do, what guests we should go. So it does take a lot of work, but it's been really rewarding. So
it's been a pleasure.
Cheers, Lindsay. Let's raise our
cheers.
Glass to this podcast.
I'm a little bit pissed as well, by the way.
Pissed,
but I'm feeling nice and warm and fuzzy inside.
Yeah.
And I have actually got in my notes, personal highlights. Oh yeah.
She's just double checking she was going to mention this podcast.
Getting engaged, buying a house, starting this podcast. Wow. I've written on my notes,
the big
which I
three.
Have not looked at hardly once.
Is this the third best thing that's happened to you in that list?
I mean, it might be a bit above getting engaged, actually.
Take that, Tally. No, I've genuinely really enjoyed it. And we should say big thanks to Storm Huntley, Bella Hull, and Matt Ford for being for coming on. As I said, we'll come back in sort of mid-January. We're not setting a set date, but we'll come back in sort of roughly mid-January, and we're going to aim to get some loads of, I love getting guests on.
Yeah,
I love meeting people and chatting with them.
We've
and getting
got
them
some
on.
Interesting ones who've said they would like to come on.
And we've got some interesting ideas.
Yeah,
some ambitious ones, but we're going to try and get as many guests on as well. So I think it's been a lot of fun. As I said, it's our end of series episode, so I thought what would make quite a nice quiz is I'm going to ask Lindsay 3 questions based on things I have definitely mentioned in previous episodes about me. See how much she remembers. And of course,
pressure.
Lindsay will ask me 3 questions about her that she has definitely mentioned on this podcast to see how much I remember things she said.
I feel like mine are quite easy.
I think mine might be quite easy.
Okay, good. That's right.
So, do you want to go first?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Are we alternating or three?
Yeah, let's alternate.
Okay,
let's alternate,
right.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. So my first
should just say we're getting through this, but we're at the bottom of this bottle of red wine. It's been a lovely, lovely
I've got
drop.
A
what
lovely
is this?
Lovely rosy glow to my
what is it? Malbec.
A Malbec.
Malbec. Yeah.
Malbec.
Malbec. That's me doing my Jolly Green Giant impression.
Ho ho ho.
Yeah, go
right,
for it.
My first question is, where did I first get drunk?
Okay, I'm pretty sure it was in Essex, where and you used to do these kind of like something bike related, like you am I right? You're nodding.
I'm nodding.
Yeah, that's it, wasn't it? So it was in Essex when you were young, like 15 or something, and you did it was like an event. You dress up.
To be fair, we talked about this in the first ever episode, and you said to me before we started, you listened to the first episode.
I did listen to the first episode on Saturday, and
I think the words I used though were in a field in Essex.
In a field in Essex, yeah.
But you actually kind of went further because he remembered it was a kind of tradition and
it
was a cycle weekend and well done, you totally get that.
I should say
I always say this, like, oh, you get a point, but we never ever take points.
We never have that points. Before anyone thinks I'm weird, I don't always just listen back to our episodes, but I was I had a long bus journey on Saturday, nothing to listen to, so I thought, you know what, I'll go back and listen to the first episode of our podcast.
See how we've progressed. Yeah,
but you know what, genuinely, when you asked, I couldn't remember if I'd heard that on that episode or you mentioned it on another. But obviously, you mentioned the first. So, yeah, very good.
Yeah.
Excellent. Right, my first question. Which shop was I working in when I had to do the minute silence for Princess Diana?
It was a shoe shop, and it was...
Sort of a shoe shop. It was a...
Burton's?
Close. It's like that type of high street clothes shop. Not shoe shop specifically.
Oh, wasn't specifically shoes?
No.
Because I remember you saying you had to measure people's feet.
I worked on the shoe section off this high street clothes shop. It was sort of like Burton's.
Right, okay.
Not
so it wasn't Burton's. LK Bennett? No. Is that even a thing? They're on my mind because they're one of the many, many, many companies I've seen go into administration or almost administration and got bought out in 2019. Economy's going to shit, guys. R.I.P. Jamie Oliver's restaurant chain as well.
He's not had a good year, has he?
Yeah. That's a bit of a tangent. Oh, God, where did he work? Do you know what? I was actually thinking to myself earlier, Sachin is going to ask me, where was I working when I found out Princess Diana, or when I had to do the Princess Diana thing? And I was like, I'll know that. But I didn't actually... But I thought it was...
Shall I tell you?
No. You can edit out me thinking about it, but if I get it... It's not Burton's. It's not Clark's. It's...
Try and move away from shoes. I don't think they're known for shoes. I worked in the shoe
not
bit.
Not Topman, not sort New Look, not...
That type of shop, but not those.
What's the male version of Dorothy Perkins? Oh, it's Burton's, isn't it?
It's
Principles, no.
It's one word, if that helps you. It's one word. One syllable, I think.
Oh. Oh, go on.
Next. I was working at Next at the Harlequin Centre when I had to do a minute silence on the day Princess Diana died. Was it August 31st, 1997, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, your second question.
I kind of got that. I mean, I remembered you were measuring things.
Yeah. No, I'll give you... Actually, we don't do points, but I'll give you half a point anyway.
Weirdly enough, my second question is, what was I doing when it was announced that Princess Diana died?
Oh, God. You know what? Honestly, I'm not just saying this. I know this. It's at the back of my head. Well, the thing is, it happened overnight. So...
Yeah, but when it was announced...
Yeah.
When I saw the announcement, what was I doing? And you should remember this because he kind of corrected me on something to do with it.
This is bugging me because I do remember the obviously I remember this conversation really well. I'm pretty sure you said you went into like your mum and dad's bedroom and said Princess Diana died, but I don't remember. I've got to be honest, I don't remember what you were specifically doing.
So I told you, I was sitting there watching Saturday morning cartoons. You went, this is where you're wrong, Lindsay Bowers, because she died overnight on Saturday, so it was actually Sunday morning cartoons.
I didn't say it like that, though, because that makes me sound like a proper twat.
Yeah. But you, Sorry, I don't know why I made you.
So what were you doing? You were watching cartoons?
I was watching Sunday morning cartoons. And I went up to my dad and stepmother's bedroom where they're having a lie-in and said, Princess Diana's died. And my stepmom burst into tears.
You know what's really weird about that? It makes it like we're 3 years apart in age. I'm 30. What are you, 35?
I'm 35.
Well, 4 years. I'm 39. But I was going to work at Next and you were watching...
Have you had a birthday since I last saw you?
No, I'm 39. I was born in March. I've always been... since we've done this podcast, I've always been 39.
I thought you were 38.
Oh, shit. I am 38.
I win this entire quiz because I know Sachin's age and he doesn't.
Oh my God, that's the alcohol. That's what it's done to my brain. It's made me forget how old I am. Shit, sorry.
Sachin forgets his age.
I'm 38. Okay, I'll keep that in. I won't edit it out. I'm 38.
That's
and I
the
thought
name
I said,
of the podcast. How old am I?
Yeah. Sorry, start again. I'm 38. You're 35. Mm-hmm. But it's weird. It's only 3 years, not much. But you were watching kids' cartoons and I was working at Next. It makes it sound like you were 11 and I was 16 or something at the time. But it's only 3 years.
Maybe I was just a bit too old to be watching cartoons.
Maybe I was too young to be doing a boring Sunday job.
Either just some child labour or some not very good growing up happening. I don't know.
Yeah. Right, anyway, excellent. Next. Okay, my second question. How many acts performed on the night I saw Bella Hull do stand-up?
16.
Oh my God. Well done. Remember, 16 acts on a painfully long evening.
What the fuck? Who would ever go and see 16?
Me.
Anyway, we talked about that at the time, but you didn't stay till the end, though, did you?
No, I did. Right to the end.
Oh, right, mate, what time did it start?
I tell you, it started about 8 o'clock and it finished around 11. But it was 3 hours. And Bella Bella was great, really enjoyable. The rest of the acts were, let's say, hit and miss.
But I think you're right about her, by the way. I've seen she's, like, won awards and stuff since she's been on our podcast. Look, I'm not saying it's because of being on our podcast, but,
listeners,
you know.
When Bella Hull is really famous and selling out the O2 Arena, remember where you heard her first? She was on this podcast. She was great. Loved Bella. Yeah. Great company. Right, your second question. Is it your second or third question?
My final question.
Final question.
Right. I once shook someone's hand and refused to wash it after.
I feel so cocky and arrogant. Samuel L. Jackson.
It was. Yeah. I get that question.
Well, that's good. That's interesting because my questions relate to the same conversation.
Oh, we're like so in sync.
We are, yeah. We really are. So, but might be slightly harder.
If you were female, our periods would be in sync.
Oh, God, yeah. I'd love to have a period. And that's the title of this podcast sorted
right,
out.
We know what the subject of episode 1 series 2 is gonna be. Oh my God,
talk about periods. Right,
who more were the red wine?
More no, we are not having a last time we had 2 glasses of red wine and then he went blind.
Bottle, sorry,
we're not doing that again.
We've had more than 2 glasses.
Yeah, oh, we've had way more than 2 glasses. Right, who were the two people, one famous, one non-famous, that I chose when we were discussing whose memoirs we'd like to write? So it's part of that same conversation when you mentioned Samuel L. Jackson.
Famous David Chappelle.
Yes.
Non-famous, your dad.
God, well done.
Fuck, we actually listened to each other.
You struggled to remember that.
Screaming at each other on his podcast.
Yeah, so David Chappelle and my dad.
I did have a moment of panic thinking, can I remember the male comedian? Because I'm not entirely familiar with him. But I'm a good listener.
Well done.
Kind of, if you're interesting enough.
Well, I think that's good. We listen to each other on this podcast.
We've been taking it in, haven't we?
We've been taking it in. Yeah. I think we're done, Lindsay. So, right, lead out music. It's my phone this week. Now, I've got to give you a choice. I've got 2 playlists on my phone for you to choose from. One is my current running playlist.
Right.
Which is the songs. I change it, you know, just freshen it up. But the current playlist I have when I go out running. Or a purely Christmas-based playlist, which is full of Christmas-related bangers that I downloaded yesterday. Absolute A-grade classics.
So when is this episode being released?
It's going to come out the first week of December. So that's what I was wondering. Would you think it's too early to be playing Christmas songs at the end of this episode? But then again, it's also our final episode before Christmas. So do you want to do the Christmas bangers or my running playlist?
I feel like a bit of a miserable bitch if I say no to the Christmas one, so let's do the Christmas one.
Okay, so I'm unlocking my phone.
I mean, it's far too early.
It is, yeah. Well,
it is the last one of the year as we haven't really talked about anything that festive, so this is gonna make up for it.
No, it is, it's a bit odd, we're doing this in late November, but as I said, last episode of the year,
basically. So basically Christmas.
I'm just gonna hold my phone up and show you. So here we go, clicking playlist on Apple Music, hitting my essential Christmas playlist.
Right,
I'm going to hit shuffle. You ready?
Souffle.
Let's see what comes up. You happy with that one?
Yeah, that is a quality Christmas song.
It's a classic.
And actually, I think that's kind of a perfect one to outro the whole kind of series to.
Yeah.
It's easy going and it's ploddy, but it's classic.
It's a beautiful song. I think it's in my top three. I'm going to say it's my top three Christmas songs. Yeah. Obviously, won't mention it as is tradition on this podcast.
It's not irritating.
It's beautiful.
A lot of Christmas tunes can be irritating, but this isn't. It's one of the good ones.
It's beautiful. Yeah. So, lovely way to end this podcast. So, Lindsay.
Sachin.
Thank you for...
Satch out.
Thank you for doing this podcast with me. It's obviously not the end. We will come.
He's gonna break up with me over Christmas.
Yeah, thank you for doing it. Over and out. No, we'll be back in January. We will do a load more episodes in January. As I said, we'll aim to get a load of really good guests on as well as doing ones on our own back at the Duke. I've got to say, the Duke has been a brilliant host for us. I mean, they haven't done anything, but they've just served us alcohol, but they've also been very welcoming when we've when we've sort of obviously spoken to the staff here and explained what we're doing, they've always been really encouraging and very nice and very polite. It's a lovely setting. It's a beautiful pub. I've really enjoyed recording there.
I just realised, of all the people in a pub, they're all sitting as far away from us as possible. Yeah. And I don't know if that's out of respect of seeing we're doing a podcast or what the fuck are those weirdos doing with those microphones.
Well, you know what? I think we discussed this when we met. I'd be up for people kind of just coming over and asking what we're doing. We had that little bit of that on episode 6, didn't we?
When a man said, oh, your scarf's fallen.
Yeah, but we've not had a lot of engagement. So anyone listening to this who drinks in the Duke, come over and say hello. We'd love to engage with you. As I said, thank you to Storm Huntley, Bella Hull and Matt Ford, our three guests. As I said, we're going to try and get some more guests on. And generally, thank you all for listening, the people who do listen to this podcast. I think we've got a little loyal band of listeners. We're hoping to get more in the new year. As ever, please remember to rate and review the podcast. 5-star reviews, please. It helps other people find this podcast. Also, get in touch via our Twitter account, which is at ITTOpod, and our email address, ittopod@gmail.com. But that's it, I think, for 2019.
2019.
Lindsay, have a wonderful Christmas. Have a wonderful New Year.
You
I'm
too.
Sure we'll be in contact. Well, I know we'll be in contact between then and now. Or between then and we record again. And to all our listeners, have a great Christmas, great New Year. Back in January 2020. Goodbye.
See you then.
Faces. I'm driving home for Christmas.